Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 80. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer, and I'm here today with fellow SMA News Today contributors, Michael Morali and Deanne Runge, for another roundtable discussion. Michael, how are you today?
Doing good, Kevin. How about yourself?
Doing great. Deanne, how are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I am excited to be here today. And before we get started, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay, well, let's get started. So today we're going to be doing, we'll do our usual news and columns, but I wanted to start off this episode looking at some recent topics from the SMA News Today forums. So Deanne, let's start with you because I picked a couple that you had written on there, and I thought these were really interesting and they got some really good conversation on the forums. So if you want to talk a little bit about these, first off was the one you posted on sleep solutions. And I think this is a really pertinent topic for the SMA community. So do you want to talk just a little bit about this one?
Yeah, well, I just shared what I use to get comfortable at night. I kind of found the magic combination that works for me. And then I posted a link. I think I actually found out about it through Michael about a bed that actually helps you get out of bed. And whereas it wouldn't be useful for me, I can see where it would be useful for other people.
That's great. That's great. Michael, what was the bed device that you had recommended?
Well, it was basically a bed. If you've ever seen the sit to stand chairs, you know, where somebody that has a hard time getting out of a chair, that the chair will stand up, kind of ease them into a standing position. The bed is similar to that. It's just instead of a chair, it's the actual mattress, and it lays down and folds up like a chair. So you sit down in it first, get yourself comfortable, and then it lays back like a normal bed. So it's basically the same concept as the sit-to-stand chair.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, no, I know. For me, I've definitely tried different things over the years, too, and that's a really interesting device I may look into. For me, I use a hospital bed, and one thing that's helped me a lot in recent years with, like, pressure sores and that kind of thing is having sheepskin cloth right under me. That's been, especially because it's hard for me to turn much at night. And so, you know, of course I have to get caregivers to do that. And so that helps a lot alleviate pressure sores and stiffness. So yeah, Deanne, I thought this was a really great topic and we got some really good responses in the forums. If you haven't yet joined this conversation, that's why we wanted to highlight these today. Deanne, there was another one, a really interesting one you'd posted as well, about titled Trying to Keep Expectations in Check. Can you also talk a little bit about this one?
This one came up because I have a lot of projects that I need help with. And I know when you need help with every aspect of your life, it's kind of trying to decide what you should ask help with and what your expectations should be as far as getting that help. I don't want to over ask people for things, but yet I do want things done in a kind of a timely manner. Uh-huh. So I'm kind of struggling with that balance. And I know a lot of other people do too.
Oh, I can totally relate. This topic really resonated with me because like you said, especially when it's, I mean, I have a great family and friends and I mean, they would do anything for me, but still it's like when you need significant things, you know, like something redone around the house or, you know, all these things that you can't do physically and you have to ask other people for, it's like, it's trying to figure out that constant balance of, okay, how much is too much to ask? And, you know, this kind of like guilt in the back of your mind. And I think this was a very relatable topic for a lot of people and I'm glad you posted it. Michael, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this one?
No, you know, I actually read Deanne's entry and I found it very, I'm not going to say funny because I know exactly what she's talking about, when you ask family members to do something for you and they say, oh yeah, you know, I'll get back with you as soon as I can. And, you know, months later, you're reminding them to do it again. So
yeah.
You just got to kind of pick and choose, you know, I guess for a lack of a better word, you almost have to pick your battles. Which one of these do you want done? And which one is more important? Always pick the most important one that needs to get done now, and then try to select some things that can hold off. But I know exactly where, I know exactly what Deanne is talking about, because I'm faced with the exact same thing.
And then showing your appreciation, even though I have trouble, I know I do appreciate it, but when you have to wait for so long, it's harder to be as appreciative. And sometimes how do you show that appreciation is tricky too.
Yeah, especially when it comes to family.
Yeah.
It's so true. I think it's a really, like I said, universal thing that applies to not just the SMA community, but other disabled communities. And, you know, it's, I just like the conversations like this are important to have, because it's, you know, acknowledging those feelings. And, you know, like I said, even when you have friends and family that are more than willing to help you out, it's like, you have that guilt in the back of your mind, and you want to, and it's something you're always cognizant about. So again, I really appreciate you posting this. And there have been so many other conversations recently in the forums that have been really fascinating, both from moderators and members. Another one I wanted to just briefly mention, I didn't put it in the outline here, but Alyssa has been talking about opening an ABLE account. And that's something I actually did just yesterday. And so it's been something I've thought about for a while. And I'm excited because it helps me be a little more financially stable and, you know, start saving some money. So, it was something I really didn't know enough about for a long time. And I mean, I'd heard about, but I'm glad I finally took the action on. And so, it's the forums, I think, are a great space to have these conversations, both about, you know, research and treatment related topics, but also just daily living, financial advice, yeah, et cetera.
Well, and we just have fun topics too. Like Alyssa just posted a would you rather comment. Would you rather be overheated or cold? She prefers being on the chilly side, whereas I like being on the warmer side. So it's just a lot of informational posts and just fun ones as well.
Yes, and I completely agree with you. I would rather sweat than shiver any day of the week.
Yeah.
That seems to be the overwhelming response, but we'd love everyone's input.
Absolutely. No, I think that was a really fun conversation too. So, so I just wanted to highlight some of those. And again, Deanne, thank you for posting those topics. And to our listeners out there, if you haven't yet joined the forums, I encourage you to do so, because we have a lot of great conversations. So moving on to our next topic, I wanted to highlight some news stories. So the first one, and this one applies more to rare disease communities in general. As we mentioned on the podcast before, SMA News Today is part of a larger parent company, BioNews, that focuses on a wide range of rare diseases. And so this feature story by Hawk and Miller is one that ran on multiple of our sites, because it's very pertinent to different disease communities. And the story titled Cost of Rare Diseases in US ? $1 trillion in 2019, Every Life Foundation Finds. So basically what this story is about is looking at how much does it actually cost for rare disease communities from, and this applies to everything from caregiver costs to medical appointments to just anything to do with daily living. We all know living with a rare disease is, you know, incredibly expensive. But what I really like about this story is it breaks it down, because this foundation, the Every Life Foundation, put together this survey working with other organizations to really quantify just how much it costs for people living with rare diseases in the US every year. And that's why they came to this staggering number of almost $1 trillion. And I think this story is so important is that it encourages lawmakers especially to really look at these numbers and see just how much expenses are for our communities and what they could possibly do to rectify some of those costs to help us be more independent. And so this was, again, I don't want to go into huge detail on this story because I'd rather listeners go out there, read it for yourselves. And we also have it, I think, on the flash briefings as well. But this is a really great feature story. And I just wanted, Michael, Deanne, I just want to see if you had any thoughts on this.
It is mind-boggling when you think of the cost. But again, we're just trying to live our lives.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we have costs that other people don't, you know, when you factor in caregiving, how many people need caregiving? I mean, if you're able-bodied, you don't. For those of us that are in wheelchairs that can't do for ourselves, a lot of that is out-of-pocket expense, you know, unless you're funded by the government for some reason, then that's fine. But, you know, for the majority of us, it's an out-of-pocket expense. So it gets very, very expensive. Let's just say this. When I retired from ExxonMobil, I had a pretty good size 401. It only took me 7 years to burn through it.
Yeah.
That's how fast it can go.
Well, and like you said about caregivers, it's like what a lot of people outside our communities don't realize is that, yes, you're either paying out of pocket for them, or if you're funded by the government, that limits how much you can make if you're employed, you know? And so this was a conversation I was actually having with a neighbor a few months ago that had no idea about this kind of thing, because it's something unless you live with, you really don't comprehend. And so that's what I love about this story, is it really breaks it down for people and just to get an idea of our reality. And so I think this is a really important story, and I encourage everyone listening to go check it out. And again, all the articles we're discussing today will be linked in the description. But yeah, so I just wanted to highlight that story. And the other one that is more SMA specific. So, you know, Michael and I have talked pretty extensively as far as what we know about Scholar Rock's treatment, previously known as SRK-015, now known as apitegromab. And there was an update here recently about the types 2 and 3 TOPAZ trial. Michael, why don't you go give just an overview of this story?
Okay. Basically, what it is Scholar Rock's treatment called apitegromab. It's going to be the first muscle-targeted therapy.
Right.
And Spinraza and Evrysdi work on the cellular level, and they're considered gene-modifying therapy, okay? Zolgensma is a gene replacement therapy. But for a modifying therapy, really the only thing it's doing is just increasing the amount of the SMN protein that the SMN2 gene provides our bodies. Well, what apitegromab will do is it will allow us to start building muscle mass and muscle strength. Spinraza and Evrysdi do not do that. Now, I'm not saying that you're not going to get any stronger if you're taking Spinraza or Evrysdi, because I have. But I'm taking physical therapy and I'm doing a lot of core strengthening. But I am getting a little bit stronger in my core, but my hands and my fingers have definitely gotten weaker over the last year. So, you know, these other treatments may slow or possibly even stop the progression, but it doesn't do anything to help build muscle mass and strength. And that's what apitegromab will do. Scholar Rock released their 6-month interim data toward the end of last year. And then they're scheduled to release more information regarding the TOPAZ trial in June of this year. So we're expecting some really, really good results. Matter of fact, I even think that they already know what some of these results are going to be, because Scholar Rock was just awarded a patent for apitegromab. And also, they are planning on taking this to a pivotal phase 3 trial. Pharmaceutical companies don't take their treatments to a phase 3 pivotal trial unless they know that they've got something good. They've already been awarded, I'm not going to say it's fast track status, but they've been given priority status for this treatment. So priority status is very similar to fast track status, which is what Biogen got when they developed Spinraza. So I think that we're going to see some movement this year, because by what I'm reading, this pivotal phase 3 trial is scheduled to start sometime toward the end of this year. The Topaz trial will not officially come to an end until sometime in 2023. But given the fact that they're going to go to a phase three trial, tells me that they are already seeing some outstanding results. Some of the results in the information that we have is that there are two different types of tests that they're using on people. They're using the Hammersmith scale test. Those are for people that are ambulatory, that are able to get up and walk. And then they're using the Hammersmith extended functional test, or the Hammersmith functional motor scale extended, in non-ambulatory patients, such as you, Kevin, and Deanne, and myself. So we've all been through those tests where they make us draw in a maze and pick up a coin and drop it in a glass. So it's just the only way that they have to test what type of functionality, range of motion, and strength that we have. But the people that are being tested in this Topaz trial, typically a 3-point increase in either one of these Hammersmith tests is considered notable. And some of these people are receiving 7 or 8-point differences in these scales. And that's right, only after being on the treatment for about 6 months, almost a year. So they are definitely seeing some really good results.
Right, right. No, it's good. I mean, I know we've been talking about it for a few months now, but yeah, as we're having more of the news stories coming out about this, it's looking like it could be within the next year or so, you know, closer to FDA approval. So we will definitely keep listeners informed as we hear more updates. But Deanne, do you have any thoughts on this? I know we've talked a little bit in previous discussions.
It is exciting that so much has evolved in the last few years. I'm kind of curious if this will be on the list of banned substances for the Olympics.
I'm sure it will be.
I am curious to read more about the studies and how it's working, and especially with the combination treatment. I think that's an interesting option.
Yeah, let me say this one thing, Kevin. Apitegromab received orphan drug designation in both the U.S. and Europe, as well as rare pediatric disease status in the U.S. and priority medicines designation in Europe. So they are being recognized now.
Right, right. Oh, it's a huge development. And yeah, we will definitely be having more updates. And you can check out all of our articles on SMANewsToday.com about apitegromab, and, you know, previously SRK-015. So again, we will have more updates in the coming months, but that wraps it up for news. So thank you, Michael. Thank you, Deanne. And before we get to our last section, if everyone could please listen to another brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, welcome back. So for our final part today, we're going to be highlighting a few recent columns from our main site. As always, we have multiple columnists and a lot of great content there, and we don't have time to go through all of it in today's episode, but wanted to highlight just a few. And the first one we wanted to touch on is written by Sherry Toe, and it's titled "Why I Never Had a Spinal Fusion, a Retrospective 10 Years Later." And so spinal fusion surgery is very common, at least for our generation of everyone here on the podcast. It's I had mine when I was about 11 or 12. And, you know, it's a surgery designed to help straighten out your spine, and as, you know, that part of your body atrophies over the years. And so it's very common for especially a lot of people in my generation of SMA and other adults. And Sherry in this column, though, writes about how she didn't have it because when she was looking into it, her doctors recommended that, or her doctors cautioned her that it would be very difficult for her to go under anesthesia, and it would be very possibly life-threatening. And so she and her parents ultimately opted to decline the surgery at the time. But now, but as she's learned more information since then, she, you know, she's talked to other SMA adults who had the same kind of risks and were able to have the same surgery. So it's just kind of a story about perspective and, you know, learning things along the way. And I'll read just this excerpt, which is toward the end of the column. She says, "Though I acknowledge guesswork is sometimes all we have when treating rare diseases, we must recognize that if we do not thoroughly explore our options and consult with patients, experts, and research, people like me will be harmed in the long run." And so this was a really eye-opening column, I think, for me, because, you know, I've talked about it before on the podcast and in my columns that I have, fortunately, really good SMA experts on my healthcare team. I know that's not something everyone is fortunate enough to have. And so I've always had really good resources and access to information throughout my life, which I'm very fortunate to. But, you know, for a lot of others in the community, that's not the case. And this is very much an example of that. And it's, again, a really harrowing and eye-opening story, but one I'm grateful that Sherry shared with us. So, Deanne, do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I'm surprised. When I had my spine fused, it was kind of the only option. Mm-hmm. But I do, it does come with great risk. And I do think when you have procedures, your care is as good as your medical team. And like you said, I have a fairly great medical team, but I know the bigger cities have more knowledge. When I had my spine fused, when I was in recovery, there was actually a girl from another state that had been brought in whose surgery did not go well. And she was brought to my clinic to help correct the surgery. So I do think when you make big decisions like that, you really do have to look at your team and see if they have the knowledge that they need to do the surgery. And for her, maybe that wasn't, you know, an option at that time. But as she said, later on, she learned that, oh, maybe it would have been possible. So you kind of have to look into it and do your research. And yeah.
Absolutely. Michael, did you have any thoughts to add?
Yeah, I do. I know I had my surgery when I was 15 years old. It was in 1980. And about a year before I had my surgery, the people that were coming out of surgeries like this were having to be put in almost full body casts, and they would stay in these body casts for up to 6 months. And right before I had my surgery, they changed it to a different type. It was called the Lukway surgery, and it was two rods. They gave better stabilization. So I was in intensive care for about 6 hours after surgery. Then they took me to a private room, and I was in the hospital for about 8 days after surgery. But I got fitted for a back brace, and I had to wear a back brace anytime that I was out of bed. And I did that for about a year. Then I was slowly able to kind of wean myself off of the back brace. And I quit wearing a back brace probably about a year after surgery. So, you know, the surgeries now are a lot better. The spinal surgeries are, they've just really progressed over the past 10 years to the point to where you're not as stiff. You're not as, I guess, confined. I know I lost all of my flexibility from my chest up. So watching me lean forward is kind of funny because I have to throw my head forward to get my body moving.
Yeah.
And if I don't throw my head forward far enough or hard enough, I have to keep doing it. So it looks like I'm having a convulsion, really. I mean, it's a pathetic sight to watch. But now these newer surgeries, I don't think patients lose as much flexibility. I think the rods are better. They're better designed. And you don't have to wait till you're old or older before you can have the surgery, because these rods can actually grow with your spine. You go in for a checkup, and if the rod needs to be straightened out a little bit more or even extended, they can put a magnet on your back, and that magnet will actually help the rod grow. It's like in sections. And I think and it like, I don't know, it's like an eighth of an inch each time. So, yeah, so it's fascinating what the surgeries have now.
I wasn't aware before, well, Sherry's column, and I'm learning that not having spinal fusion is actually more common than I was aware of. I was under the impression that it was, if you had SMA, you had your spine fused. But there's actually quite a few people who don't.
Right.
And I don't know the medical complications, if the treatments for not having the spine surgery, if there are different treatments that work better or not, and if they, I know with Spinraza, that makes a difference too, and how you get your injection. And so there's a lot of things that are different if you have or have not had your spine fused.
Right. I think it also depends on if your spinal cord is curved to the point to where it starts interfering with other organs in your body. Like I needed to get mine done at about the age of 15 because it was going to start affecting my spleen and my kidney.
So, in Sherry's case, at some point you have to risk weigh the risk of the surgery as to the benefits too. So
absolutely.
Yeah. There are so many variables.
A lot to think about.
Absolutely. There are so many variables that come into play. And that's what I like most about this column is it's just a really honest perspective. And yeah, Deanne, similar to what you said, I was also under the impression for the longest time that I thought that every SMAer had spinal fusion. And, you know, over the years of going to conferences and meeting more people in the community, I've learned that that's not always the case. And you have to kind of do what works best for you. And, you know, so, but I do encourage listeners to go back and check out this column. It's a really cool story. So the second column I wanted to highlight is by Halsey Blacker, and that is an SMA patient and a pulmonologist comment on the COVID-19 vaccine. So Halsey wrote a really good piece here about talking with her pulmonologist about the vaccine, and she recently got it. And so she talked about her experiences, and then she also included her pulmonologist's thoughts after speaking with him. And so I'll read just this excerpt at the end where her pulmonologist talks about whether or not to take like ibuprofen before or after vaccinations as a preventative measure. So this is toward the end of the column, and it says, "I've often taken ibuprofen before vaccinations as a preventative measure to manage possible side effects, but I had heard you shouldn't do this with a COVID-19 vaccine. When I asked Dr. Schell about this, he said he believes there isn't enough research to support the theory that ibuprofen may interfere with the vaccine's efficacy, and he gave me permission to take it either before or after my vaccine if I felt like I needed it. In parentheses, consult with your doctor before making decisions about taking any type of medication." So this was a really good informative piece from the perspective of someone who's had the vaccine. And I know I'm not fully vaccinated, and it's been great. I don't want to give, as we've said many times on the podcast, we're not here to give medical advice, and I don't want you to go and do anything based on what we say. But just from sharing my own experiences, and then from Halsey's column here, I know more people in the SMA community are getting vaccinated, and I think that's a really good sign. And so I encourage you just to check this one out. Like I said, it has some really good information from her pulmonologist and from her perspective as well. So I don't know if you guys had any thoughts as well on this.
I do think her experience is very typical of someone who's gotten the vaccine. I have myself as well, and it seemed very similar to my experience. And again, just do what you feel is right for you. And if that's getting a vaccine, you know, do your research and do what you think is best.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I think everybody's going to have to make up their own mind as to whether or not they want the vaccine. I know one of the things that I'm going to be doing is before I get vaccinated, I want to check my vitamin D level, because by what I've been reading is that the people that are having trouble with the vaccine typically have low vitamin D levels, and you can get your doctor to check what they call the 25 OHD, which is the 25 hydroxy vitamin D levels. So I would advise everybody to just talk to your doctors about getting your vitamin D level checked, just to play on the safe side.
Absolutely. That's a great idea. So, but yeah, I think this is also a really good piece to check out. Again, these links will be in the description. So go check out Halsey's column. And then the last one I wanted to highlight was a really fascinating piece written by Ari Anderson, and it's titled How to Build and Maintain a Network of Masked Advocates. And so I read this column for the flash briefing, I think last week. And what this piece is about is talking about how, first Ari shares some stories about when his hospital bed went out, when the power went out during the night. And so it had to sink. And this is always a really disparaging situation for people like us to be in, because, you know, especially for people like me who have a hospital bed and then wear a BiPAP at night, when the power goes out at night, it's more than an inconvenience, because we literally sink into our beds and then all the breathing equipment we're using goes off. And so he talked about what the situation used to be like for him. But then he talks about how he did a fundraiser to get a power generator installed in his house. And that, you know, of course, saved him in situations like this when the power went out at night during a thunderstorm or whatever. And so he uses that as a jumping point to talk about how there are many people in his life who have been, you know, what he calls masked advocates, where he may not even know their name, or he has sort of a, you know, knows them more as acquaintances, but they've been instrumental in providing medical equipment and raising money for his care over the years. And so I really like this piece because it does highlight something that is, I think, really universal about being in the SMA community. I know I've benefited a lot over the years just from knowing people all over the place. And, you know, when I needed something, I have a community to go to. And I think that's a really essential thing. And so I'll read just this excerpt here from the column where Ari says, I've learned that by keeping those connections from long ago, masked advocates can help you prepare for future unknown crises or masked dangers. It also gives you the reassuring feeling that whatever you're going through, you are not alone. Having this feeling is my hope for you. So again, I really like this piece. I don't know, Michael Dean, do you have any thoughts on this or anything that really resonated with you?
Well, it's definitely unsettling when you rely on something and then you don't have access to it, like when the power goes out. But I really resonated with his story because when I got my service dog, I needed extra help to, sorry about that.
Oh, no worries.
But I needed extra help to go out to Ohio to get my service dog. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people rallied behind me to help me do that. And I really appreciated that. And it's, you know, it turned out successful. And I know everybody knows how appreciative I am. But yeah, it definitely, it's a nice feeling to know that people have your back.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think also our life is dependent on electricity. And it's really sad because we have so many things that work off electricity that we need. Now, I'm not on any BiPAP machine, so I feel fortunate for that. But I live in Texas, and as most of the listeners may know, just a couple of months ago, Texas lost power for, you know, 3 days, almost 4 days. And that was extremely inconvenient, because I couldn't do a thing. I was literally stuck in bed. My hoist is electric, you know, and so I was stuck in bed for, you know, 2, 3, almost 4 days, and it was not fun. So we definitely rely. Luckily, I've got some firefighters that have a station real close to my house, and they've taken me to the hospital a few times. So I called them, and they were like, hey, Michael, let us know when you're ready to go to bed. We'll come put you to bed. We'll be there early in the morning the next day and help you get out of bed. So, you know, the old adage is not what you know, but who you know, really comes into play.
Oh, it's so true. And I think for me, this column really resonated because to get my Jayco arm a few years ago, when I got mine, it was so early on the market that you couldn't even apply for insurance. Insurance wasn't funding them at all. So we had to do a fundraiser in order to raise money to acquire the arm. And that, you know, we did a GoFundMe. And I mean, it was great to see so much support from not just family and friends, but people I didn't know and, you know, friends of friends and all these people in my community. And so that's what where I really reminded me of reading this piece. But yeah, it's something that's so true. And I like what Ari says too about how he writes a letter every year that goes out to numerous people who have donated to him over the years or that he's made connections with, and how that's helped him, you know, stay connected with so many people and build these relationships. And so, yeah, I just thought this was a really powerful, positive piece, and I encourage everyone listening to go check it out. And I think Ari and Sherry's columns, I believe, are both on Thursdays. I know Hollis's is on Fridays. And like I said, we have several other columnists on this on SMA News Today, myself included. And we have a lot of great content there. So I encourage you all to go check these out. We have plenty of stories out there from people in the community. So, well, that about wraps it up for today. So, Deanne, Michael, thank you so much for joining. And do either of you have any final thoughts?
No, I'm good.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I'm back.
Absolutely, yep. As always. It's been a while since the three of us have done one of these together. So always good to have the whole gang here. But awesome. Well, thank you both again. And for our listeners out there, you can hear more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast. You can also connect with us directly on our forums and follow us on our main website at smanewstoday.com for the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we will see you next time.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums, a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.